Well, again, I think the housing shortage in general, and I don't mean just low affordable housing, I mean housing at all.
We just want to party, I'm just for you. We just want to party, I'm just for you.
This is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Ketermaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC Acra.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when Federico Durand cuts analog tape the old-fashioned way. Teresa Wong plays her cello through a scary, scary night. And Alvin Lussier misdirects us to the beat of a non-existent drummer. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cornelius Eady of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Hello and welcome to a myriad of musings and music with the ninth grade of Berkshire Country Day School. I'm Esme and here with me is...
Lana.
Rafi.
Eli.
Miles.
And Nora.
So today we are going to interview Craig Bender. He is the treasurer of the Columbia County Bail Fund. He is the founder of the organization Kids Need Music. He is on the Taconic School Board. And he works at IBM. Most of us in ninth grade, actually we live in Columbia County, and you do too. And so what do you think some of the challenges are of living in Columbia County, and what do you like about living in Columbia County?
Well, let me first say I love living in Columbia County. It is so beautiful, picturesque. I am a nature lover. I love hiking. I love being in the wilderness. I love hunting, which there's plenty of deer around here. You may have hit a few with your car. But there are challenges living in Columbia County, specifically in terms of the court system, in terms of a certain amount of poverty, and just opportunities for people to work. There are many challenges here. And so I'd like to think that some of the things that I'm involved in are to help address those challenges, to help maybe some of the poor who have issues with the legal system. You mentioned the Columbia County Bail Fund. Mm-hmm. We could talk more about that. And also, from a positive perspective, helping students who can't afford instruments that want to be involved with music.
Yeah.
That's something we need to work on.
That's really great. I guess my next question is, we talked about your involved with the Bail Fund. How did you learn about the Bail Fund initially, and what led you to becoming the treasurer or their treasurer?
Well, Linda Musman, who is one of the creators of Time and Space Limited in Hudson, first introduced me to the issue around bail. I have to admit that I was, before I spoke to Linda, I was somewhat ignorant about the topic. She had been involved in helping people that are incarcerated for decades, specifically bailing people out or providing bail for people that cannot afford. We believe at the Columbia County Bail Fund that if you are convicted of a crime and sentenced to jail, then sure, you should be in jail. Probably. There's always some reasons that maybe there are some biases towards minorities that tend more to convict them more than non-minorities. But if you have not been convicted, you're not supposed to be in jail. It's that simple. So a lot of people mm-hmm. are in jail simply because they're poor. If a judge says, if they're accused of a low-level crime, a misdemeanor, and they are being told to pay $200 as bail to get out of jail, and they don't have $200, somebody can sit in jail for a month waiting for their day in court. So I'd just like to give like one example of somebody that we helped as part of the bail fund. That person was charged with a misdemeanor. They were sent to jail. He did not have the $200 that he needed to get out. Within a couple of hours, we bailed this gentleman out. A month later, he went to trial. You know what his sentence was? Can you guess? I mean, guess what his sentence was.
I'm assuming something to do with parking or...
Well, that was not the crime, but what was his punishment? Sentence. What was his punishment?
A small community service.
You got it. Community service. So that gentleman was sentenced to 30 hours of community service.
Now 30?
30 hours.
So kidding.
It's, you know, it's could be viewed a lot or not a lot, but the point is...
Not a lot of time for the amount of time you would have spent in jail for not paying his bail.
And exactly. That person would have been in jail for a month, locked up, waiting for sentencing.
For 30 hours of community service.
For 30 hours of community service, exactly. So, you know, Linda, you asked me, how did I get involved? Linda Musman introduced me to the topic. I just said, mm-hmm. wow, there are some grave injustices here. And it resonated with me as something that I thought I can do to make a difference in some people's lives.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the candidates that you take a liking to in terms of this person needs help? And you talked about the financial barrier, but more specifically their crimes. And they're not crimes, they're misdemeanors that you see are, they have the opportunity to be let out on bail.
Okay, so there is a legal criteria of who we are allowed to help and who we are not allowed to help. So the Columbia County Bail Fund is something called a charitable bail organization, or CBO. Mm-hmm. And the rules, the laws around CBOs are such that we can only provide bail for those that have committed misdemeanors only, no felonies, no violent crimes, you know, burglary, murder, you know, that's all felonies. Misdemeanors are very, very low level crimes. So we can only help those with misdemeanors by law and only those with $2,000 of bail or less. So the first thing we do is we find out somebody has just been incarcerated. So someone from the Columbia County Bail Fund will go to the jail and interview the candidate and ask them a few questions. Do you have a job? Do you have some place to live? What's your address? What's your phone number? You know, just some basic questions. We'll take the basic information back to the rest of the board. There's five of us, and we'll vote and say, yes, we should help that person. And if the answer is yes, then a couple of us are actually bail bondsmen. I am one of those. So I had to pass a bail bondsman test and get a license and get some insurance behind that. And I will then go to the jail and post bail for that person. Now, once they're out, what happens, right? Do they just wander away? Well, no, because we do have some volunteers that will then talk to that person after they've been released from jail and call them up and say, hey, your court date is tomorrow. Don't forget to go. Or do you need a ride? Perhaps they need $20 because they need to get a cab or they need to get their cell phone charged so they can make a couple of phone calls. So we don't just like release and say goodbye. We try to release, but then see what other needs they may have at a very minimal level. Mm-hmm. And help them out, and then also try to make sure that they get back to jail. Not to jail, excuse me. That they get back to, that they don't go back to jail, that they go to court.
So when did the Columbia County Bail Fund begin? Like when?
I would think, I'm not that good with dates, to be honest, but I'm saying about 2 years now we've been doing this, yes.
And so you've been with them for that whole time?
From the very beginning, from the inception, yes.
As the treasurer of the bail fund, what are your responsibilities?
Well, a couple things. I write the checks. So we have some bills that we have to pay. We have a PO box. We have a cell phone. We have insurance that we have to pay. I do an annual report. I help file the income taxes and do those types of reports. It's not a very arduous task to be the treasurer. It's fairly minimal. If we need some additional bail money, I then go to the bank and withdraw cash, and either me or one other person in an organization who can post bail, you know, get that cash to that person so they can post bail. So I keep track of expenses. I keep track of donations and then write checks and then file a year-end report.
Do you think it is important that a county should have a bail fund? And if so, why?
Very important. It's very important because there are many people that get incarcerated before they are convicted. And if they are incarcerated before they are convicted, why are they incarcerated? Because they can't afford the bail. It's that simple. Locking people up prior to conviction is a problem for the poor. You or I would not have that issue, right? I mean, I have the wherewithal to, even if I don't have enough money to maybe, you know, I own a house, I could put my house up as collateral if I ever committed a crime or was accused of committing a crime and I needed to get out, I would have a means to do it. There are many, many people in the county that don't have a means to do it and they need the help. And every single person has extremely appreciative. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, otherwise they could perhaps lose their job. They have to be at work tomorrow. So not only have they not been convicted, but they're put in jail and they're now at risk of losing their employment. Or they have children and their children have to go to child protective services or get put into a foster home because the parent is sitting in jail. Or perhaps they have a drug abuse problem and they are in a treatment program, but now they're in jail. So there are many, many reasons why being in jail can make your sort of bad life get a lot worse. Again, you're not convicted. You are pending trial and, you know, you could be innocent or does the punishment fit the crime? Does it, the case that I gave of the gentleman that was got 30 hours of community service. I mean, did the punishment fit the crime if you're sitting in jail for a month? Many times the answer is no.
So you clearly are very involved in the justice system in Columbia County. What do you see as the biggest flaw in the system, and how would you personally fix it if you had all the means to go and do that?
If I was king, what would I do?
Exactly.
How would I fix all of this? It's a very complex problem. First of all, jails are used more than just jails because we don't have enough services in the county. For example, drug addiction is a big problem, opioid crisis or other drugs, and we need treatment. We need people to be able to be referred to the right agencies for treatment. And I don't think we have enough of that in this area.
And does the Columbia County Bail, do you help, in addition to bail, do you help people receive treatment or is that somebody else?
We don't help them with treatment. That does go beyond our mission. My point is, though, that oftentimes some people will say, they're better off in jail, even if they're not convicted, because if they weren't in jail, then they'd be out and doing drugs and may overdose. So they don't have access to drugs while they're in jail, so they won't overdose. And let's keep them in jail. Well, that's really not the right answer.
Yeah.
The right answer is proper treatment, proper treatment programs for them to go to, or job training, or other opportunities that can help people get on the right path.
Yeah.
So to fix the problem, it is, number one, we need better laws about who should be in jail as a result of misdemeanors in terms of bail before they're convicted. That needs to be fixed. And there is a new law that's coming out in January. I'm not well versed in it yet, although I will be soon. But in addition to reforming jail and having prison reform, we also need services in the community to help people with their life that are in trouble. You know, people that are in trouble for a reason. They're not in trouble because they're bad people. They're in trouble because of whatever social situation that caused them to go down that path. And I would say many of these people do want help. You can only help people that want the help.
Yeah.
I would say a lot of these people really do want the help. They want to straighten out their lives. But I, you know, personally, like, I have a candy addiction. I eat too much sugar. I say, well, I'm just going to stop eating candy bars. Not so easy for me to do, right? Well, multiply that by 10 when it comes to other issues like drugs, and it's much, much harder to do just on your own.
Yeah.
So you definitely would say you would grow the rehabilitation program out of, or even create a different program for, because the main goal is to get better people back from jail because they don't necessarily have the same opportunities, and also giving them the confidence to see that there are different programs or different opportunities for them to grow.
Very well put, and I really like the point you made about giving them the confidence. I had one person that I posted bail for, and this person said to me, it's the first time that anybody has ever trusted me for anything. Like, the fact that somebody, that a stranger showed up and posted bail, was such a vote of, wow, there are human beings out there that actually care. That person hadn't experienced that in, at least in any recent times. I don't know how far back that went in that person's life, but they were just enormously appreciative. And I would say everybody that we post bail for, they just, wow. And you did this with other people's money that they just gave you to post bail for me. And what I say to them is, you know, and they always want to do something back. They want to, how can we help? How can we repay you? And what I say to them is, the only repayment that we want is for you to show up at court and go through the process, because that's how we get the bail money back. If you don't go to court, then we lose the money. And that then enables us to help fewer people because we have less money to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So in some sense, it's not just a charity where we're giving them something, but we're also giving them some responsibility. Like, they are now responsible for the next person that goes to jail that needs help. Because if they don't show up at court and we lose the money, it's that fewer people that we can help. And they become part of this process of giving back just by showing up to court, which seems pretty obvious, but not really. Like, people skip court all the time.
So you enjoy your work as a bail bondsman, as a treasurer, and as helping people who are poor get their bail paid. So do you enjoy this?
It's very gratifying for me, and it's very gratifying for me because there's great inequities. We have a 2-tier system for bail and for jail. Those that can afford and those that cannot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are poor and you cannot afford it, you're out of luck. It's that simple.
So is there something that you've learned as working as a bail bondsman? I don't know, something specific or general, just that you've learned as working?
Well, first of all, I was completely ignorant and unaware that there was even this issue. I mean, I just assume, I can't even say I assumed. It was not even something I thought about. I walked around my happy life, living in my nice house and this beautiful county, and this, what a great place for everybody, right? Well, not so. So the first thing I learned was just being aware of what's been going on, learning about the process of dealing with the jail, dealing with the public defenders, dealing with the judges. You know, I learned a lot about the whole process. And I think I learned a little more compassion on my part, that working with people that do want the help and are reaching out for that help is very, very gratifying for me. And I didn't know that was part of me until I started working in it, and it became just such a great thing to work on.
So you mentioned the new bail law that's going into effect in today, actually. And so, this law, it I guess roughly, I don't know that much about it, but roughly it seems to eliminate the need for bail for some misdemeanors. If there's something you want to expand on that, feel free. And is do you think this is an important next step?
It's an important next step. I'll expand on it a little bit because I have not been fully briefed on the new law, although I will be soon because January is right around the corner. But there's a couple of points. One is that judges will not require bail for people that have been accused. And I like to use that word accused because accused doesn't mean guilty.
Yeah.
It means accused. And we all know that just because you're accused doesn't mean it's true. So judges will have less of an ability to set bail for these minor offenses. They would be released on their own recognizance. Now, the other point is that the amount of bail that we will be allowed to help people with will increase. I'm not sure what the number is, but it's more than $2,000. And there will also, the types of crimes that we will be able to help people on will also expand. So there may be some low-level felonies. And again, don't ask me which felonies. I'm not sure. I'm not an attorney. We do have attorneys in our group, in our part of our board that will advise us, like, which specific felonies we can help on and which we can't. So it's very important from a Columbia County perspective, but I would say it's also very important from a state perspective because we only operate, the Columbia County Bail Fund only operates and can only help people in Columbia County.
Yeah.
We can't help people in Greene County or Rensselaer County or Albany. We are restricted by law only to help people in the county which we incorporated, which is Columbia County. And besides the Columbia County Bail Fund, and then there's a fund down in New York City, which helps a lot of people. Most of the state does not have a bail fund to help. So by changing the law statewide, there's going to be a lot more people that won't be ensnared in this issue where there is no bail fund.
Well, it's great hearing about your involvement in the bail fund, but we had a couple questions about the program that you founded, and specifically what led you to found the Kids Need Music program, and maybe if you could tell us a little bit about what the program is, what it aspires to be, and yeah.
Okay. Well, about, I'm going to say 8 years ago, there was a program advertised in the Register Star, which is a local newspaper, that in Hudson, at the Hudson City School District, that one could volunteer to read to a child once a week at the library during lunch. And I thought, that sounds interesting. I have often have extra time, you know, during my lunch hour. So I signed up for this program. I went to the library at the school during lunch. I was assigned a particular child. His name is Malik. And I read to Malik for 20 minutes, and then you come back once a week. And you get the same child. So Malik and I became buddies. He was from, let's just say, an underprivileged family. And after becoming buddies, he expressed interest in being in the band. And I bought him a trombone so he could be in the band. He had a great time. I met the music teacher, Scott Vorwald, who is now the music director at the Hudson City School District. And Scott was explaining to me there are so many children that want to be in the band but cannot because the school doesn't have the funds to buy instruments and the families doesn't have the money to rent or buy instruments. So that they did have a band program, but it was a small program. So I am a big believer that music is very important for everybody, for young people, for older people. And I started having salon concerts. I have a really nice piano in my living room. We had a concert. We invited an artist to play. People threw money in the hat, and we made enough money to buy a trumpet and a flute. So I said, wow, this was fun. We gave the school a trumpet and a flute. And so two more kids got to be in the band. Then I asked a good friend of mine. Her name is Gilly Melamed-Lev. She is a concert pianist. She was educated in Juilliard. She was a scholarship student from Juilliard. She's originally from Israel. And I said, hey, Gilly, would you like to give a concert as a fundraiser? And she said, yes, but. And the big but was, I, Craig, have to go out and find sponsors, like businesses, and I have to advertise, and I have to build an audience, and we have to, if Gilly was going to give her time to devote to this music program as a fundraiser, I had to really do it right. So I said, well, I don't know, I've never done this before, but what the heck, let me try. So I actually asked a friend of mine who, his name is Brian McGowan, he runs the Caterskill Natural Foods Market in Hudson. I said, hey, Brian, will you pay for an ad in a program? He said, sure. Wow, that was easy. And then I started going from business to business to business, and I found out, wow, there's a lot of businesses where this really resonates. Mm-hmm. And we ended up making like $2,500
wow.
on that one program. Now, since that time, we've been doing this for about 6 years, 7 years, and we have given enough instruments to the Hudson City School District. So there's about over 300 more students are in the music program than was before Kids Need Music, because we've given them more than 300 instruments for those mm-hmm. kids to play.
Wow.
That's wonderful.
So that's, and by the way, just to put a little plug in, if there's anybody out there that wants to donate to Kids Need Music, you can go to www.kidsneedmusic.org. That's kids plural, K-I-D-S, needmusic.org.
Simple.
Pretty simple. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is it about music that you think is so important for children to have in their lives and that for people to have in general?
That's a really broad topic. Sorry. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So one example is it's a great equalizer. I've seen very precocious children, kids that are very quiet and shy, kids that get in trouble, they're bullies, or however they're getting in trouble. But when you put them all in the room together in the band room, somehow music levels the playing field for all of those the kids, number one. And number two, they love it. School could be hard, right? You know, sometimes math is hard for somebody, or English is hard for somebody, or social studies is hard for somebody, and they may be struggling. But when a person goes into the music room, it's all smiles. They love doing it. It's work. And Rafi, I know you're a musician. You play the piano. I've heard you play, so you know that it's work. But it's very, very gratifying. And music helps children, not just in music, but it helps them across the board. Mm-hmm. They will do better in math. They will do better in English. They will do better in social studies. They learn to be with a group and cooperate as a group. It gives them a life skill. Now, I know, I have got a lot of math in my education. When I was in college, I had 30 credits in math. I don't use any of that math anymore. But when I was about 10 years old, my mother introduced me to the piano. I still play. Uh-huh. I'm not very good, but I have a great time with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dog likes to listen to me play sometimes. And it's a great life skill. It's something that can help people, whether they're children or adults or elderly, just enjoy life and help them in other aspects of their life.
Yeah.
Why specifically? I mean, we've mentioned that you've worked with children and you're also on the Taconic Hill School Board, correct?
Yes.
Why specifically working in education appeal to you, or not necessarily volunteering your time or working specifically with children?
So, Rafi,
or for the good of the community in general.
Okay.
It seems. You
know, people say to me, wow, Craig, it's so great that you do these things. But I have to say that I do them for very selfish reasons. I don't necessarily, my wife says, no, that's not true. And she's right. I mean, I do it because it is important to help the incarcerated. I do it because it's important to help children in general. But personally, I find it extremely gratifying to do this work. It makes me feel good. And it makes them feel good. And there's just a lot of, I don't know, kumbaya. I don't know if you know that word. Yeah. It's a very old word here. Hakuna Matata. That's like the Lion King, I think that's from. Right?
No worries.
No worries.
Yeah, that's what it is.
There you go. It's a very gratifying experience to do these things. So, I don't even remember what the question was. Why do I do this? Why do I get involved? Mm-hmm. I get involved because life is not just about making a dollar and seeing how many toys you can buy, whether a toy is, you know, a piece of electronics or a boat or whatever. It's really about community and people and how to make a better world.
Yeah.
So, as far as education goes, it's sort of in my blood. Both my parents were teachers. My mother taught kindergarten. Most of the children in her environment were minorities. She taught in Camden, New Jersey, which is basically African American, Hispanic. So I was very involved in that community. My father taught at the university level. So he taught history at Glassboro State College in South Jersey. So there's been a lot of teaching in my life. I would sometimes go to school with my mother in kindergarten to help her out. Nice. So school has been part of my life, not just going to school, but my parents being teachers. And then it was a natural extension for me to get involved in the things that I thought would make a difference.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I think I learned a lot.
We all learned a lot.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah, we all did. Thank you very much for coming in and letting us interview you.
Thank you. And y'all asked great questions. I'm very impressed with the panel here. I know that you all have a bright future. I suspect I will not be posting bail for the five of you. But perhaps I'll see you in the community doing great things. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are now going to transition to the music segment, and we're going to play a couple of some excerpts from the BCD Winter Concert that happened a few weeks ago, starting with the Lower School Chorus performing a Sound of Music medley.
Oh, Well, this class, the third and fourth grade, straddles the lower school and the middle school. So we actually performed the song for the lower school concert, and we're going to open the show with the same song. And this is my third and fourth grade general music class, which isn't necessarily a performing class. It's really about exploring music and learning the fundamentals, and in particular, really learning how to listen. I think from my experience, when I figured out how to listen, which sounds sort of like, hey, everybody knows how to listen, right? I don't really agree. I think you do have to learn how to open your ears and listen in a particular way. And so we spend a lot of time listening to music that I choose sometimes and that they choose sometimes. And then we talk about the different, you know, the mechanics of it and the theory of it and counting and how to read notes and how to read rhythms and all that fun stuff. But all the while, we're trying to have a good time. So this is a good time song we're going to start out with. This is from the island of Jamaica, the most famous Jamaican ever, I believe, Bob Marley, who I think was a real visionary and a tremendous songwriter. And this is, I like to think of this as his most positive song, of all the positive songs he wrote. This is a really great one, Three Little Birds. And of course, we've got our little chorus here, four singers on mics. We've got some orf instruments over Ash's playing some bass with me. And we've got Maggie on the uke. She's mastered some chords already, doing great. We've got Claire on the steel drum, which is also brand new to her, but she's doing great. And of course, Sasha back there holding it down on the drums. And the thing I love about reggae music from a drummer's standpoint is that it's backwards. So you get used to hearing in Western music a lot of two and three. Well, reggae is ordinarily one is nothing. Two, three, four, two, three. So it's literally backwards. I think a lot of people, when they hear it, they think, wow, that's really interesting and it's sort of different. Well, that's why it is. It's called the one drop. So we're going to start with the one drop and go from there.
Yeah. Afi and I will perform some Beethoven variations that we've been working on for the first trimester.
The Upper School Band is now going to perform a few songs. The first one is Sugar, a classic jazz standard by Stanley Turrentine.
Thank you.
was suggested by Zane. And once again, these guys always suggest music I love. In this case, you and Dan. And this tune, Bodhisattva, it's hilarious. If you listen to the words, it's just, they're so kooky. The lyrics are kooky. We don't even need the lyrics because the tune and the arrangement is so wild and very fun. And we put a lot of work in because this is a tricky arrangement. So this is Bodhisattva.
Thank you.
We're going to play this also as a little palate cleanser. We're going to play a little song from Brazil. Maybe Natalia might want to give you a little bit of info about the words.
I thought they were going to introduce me. Instead, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Jason Ennis, and I'm playing guitar for the choirs. Happy to be here. Old friend of Mr. Suter's, and I've met you somewhere. This is a tune called Águas de Março. It's by Antonio Carlos Jobim, the main... one of the most famous songwriters from Brazil, major figure of the Bossa Nova movement. This is a really beautiful samba he wrote, and it's the words are all, there's no real story or sentences, they're all images, which makes it, we did have this memorized at one point, you'll hear this, a lot of words in Portuguese, but it's all images, a stick, a stone, the end of the road, you know, it's the bricks arriving for the, he's building, the story of him building his family home in the, as the summer is coming to an end, very nostalgic and very beautiful. So, and yes, I'm going to sing. Ready?